Hello again, everyone, wherever you may be, and welcome to the 139th edition of KHOI Community Radio's Capital Week, your window on the world of Iowa politics, where we explore and analyze who's been making news in and around the state capital, what that news is, and what it all means. I'm Dennis Hart, joined as always by my longtime partner in politics, Laura Bellin of the blog site Bleeding Heartland. Hello, Laura.
Good to be here, Dennis.
We have plenty to discuss tonight, including former President Trump campaigning in Iowa last week, and a committee's final recommendations made today on which state boards and commissions could be cut or consolidated. We're going to get to all of that. But first, we begin with the news that ricocheted around the state last Thursday, and it was not good. Governor Kim Reynolds' husband, Kevin, had been diagnosed with lung cancer. Laura?
The governor's office issued a statement last Thursday and said, "Our doctor has assured us that significant advancements in lung cancer treatment have been very effective, and we have every reason to be optimistic." So they are confident, but they just wanted to let everybody know. I haven't seen any public statements since then, but First Gentleman Kevin Reynolds will be undergoing treatment for lung cancer.
Kevin and Kim Reynolds met in high school. They were married 41 years ago. They have three daughters and 11 grandchildren. And of course, Kevin Reynolds became Iowa's first ever first gentleman when Kim Reynolds ascended to the governorship back in 2017. And of course, Laura, we wish Kevin and Kim nothing but the very best tonight from Capitol.
Absolutely. And I know from my personal acquaintances that lung cancer treatments really have advanced. So wishing him and their family the best.
Now let's move on to Capitol Week's Caucus Almanac. President Trump, former President Trump, campaigned in Iowa last week in Maquoketa and in Dubuque. And he was blowtorching a lot of people along the way.
Yes, Eastern Iowa, you know, people used to think of Eastern Iowa as a heavily Democratic area, but Maquoketa and Dubuque are among the couple dozen or so pivot counties in Iowa. I'm sorry, Maquoketa is in Jackson County, but Maquoketa area in Dubuque, among those areas that voted for Barack Obama twice and then voted for Donald Trump twice. It's also a heavily Catholic part of the state and an area where many in the Republican Party are very concerned about abortion. And I think that that is probably why the Trump campaign planned this Eastern Iowa swing at this time when the president has been under fire for some of his recent comments about abortion.
Mr. Trump promised to bring back what he called the greatest economy with lower gas prices. He said he'd have a hard line in international affairs. And of course, he ripped apart Florida Governor Ron DeSantis.
Yes, I mean, he's trying to take away a lot of the issues that Ron DeSantis has been campaigning on. So he said he would redirect military might toward the border. He said he would crack down on immigration. He would try to reinstate some of the immigration policies that were in place when he was president. He said on foreign policy, he has said this before, but he repeated his claim that Russia would not have invaded Ukraine if he were president. And what I thought was interesting was that he claimed that if he were president, we would not have withdrawn from Afghanistan, which was strange because the Trump administration is the one that made the deal with the Taliban to withdraw from Afghanistan. But obviously, he is just trying to leave no room for Ron DeSantis. And some of the charges that he made are echoing what we've seen from Trump-aligned PACs or super PACs that have run some ads against Ron DeSantis, saying that he would cut Social Security, saying that he doesn't support ethanol, for instance.
Meanwhile, Governor Reynolds pushed back on Mr. Trump's comments about abortion that he had made the week before on NBC's Meet the Press program on television. Trump had said that Florida Governor DeSantis's decision to sign a six-week abortion ban into law is what the former president called a terrible thing, terrible mistake, and the governor pushed back.
Yes, Kim Reynolds, of course, signed a law that is similar, not exactly like the state of Florida law, but similar in that almost all abortions after about 6 weeks would be banned. And she posted on her social media accounts, it's never a terrible thing to protect innocent life. I want to just add, we talked about this briefly last week, but I want to emphasize that this line from Donald Trump is very important, this explanation for why Republicans had a disappointing performance in the 2022 midterms. Because another explanation that a lot of people said at the time was that the party, Trump was an anchor on the party. There were too many candidates who were too closely aligned with Trump. They underperformed in elections for governor and U.S. Senate. And that's why the Republicans didn't pick up enough seats in the U.S. House as expected. And you may recall that in the national polls of Republicans, Ron DeSantis was really riding high just in those 2 or 3 months after the 2022 midterms, because it was perceived that maybe it was time to move past Donald Trump. So Trump needs an alternate narrative. And abortion is a pretty strong one, frankly. I think a lot of people would agree. I know that Dan Gild, who follows opinion polling very closely, has for decades. He thought that the Supreme Court's Dobbs decision and the Republican stance on abortion were very important for the 2022 midterms in making it so that in most states, they did not have a red wave. So I think this is going to continue with Donald Trump trying to claim that Republicans need to talk about abortion the right way. And if they talk about it the wrong way, they're not going to be successful.
None of the other Republican candidates, either nationally or in Iowa, has made any impact against Trump in the polls. In fact, a poll this week, a summary of polls, showed Mr. Trump with a 40-point lead over his nearest competitor nationally, and that's Ron DeSantis. But abortion may be a way that they believe they could make a dent into him. And so Tim Scott was in Iowa last week, and he took this rare swing at Mr. Trump on the campaign trail, criticizing his comments about abortion.
Yes, and Tim Scott has really been going hard for the evangelical Christian vote. He sprinkles a lot of quotations from the Bible in his stump speech, uses it in his interviews as well. And so he said, and when he was campaigning, that, you know, he said that the pro-life folks that we really want to stand with us, we're not standing by. And he also criticized some of the other candidates who said that they wouldn't name a week where they would support a national abortion ban. Tim Scott has endorsed Senator Lindsey Graham's nationwide 15-week abortion ban. And some other candidates, including Ron DeSantis and Nikki Haley and Vivek Ramaswamy, have not endorsed this nationwide abortion ban. Also, Donald Trump has kind of danced around that issue. So I think Tim Scott, if he tries to get noticed during this debate that's coming up on Wednesday, it'll probably be on the abortion issue.
And you just said it, the next GOP presidential debate is going to be Wednesday night at the Reagan Presidential Library in Simi Valley out here in California. Former President Trump will not be there. He's going to be in Detroit making a speech to striking auto workers in that city. President Biden's going to be there Tuesday night. Now, this debate, as somebody said in the Washington Post, somebody wrote, it's really a matter of these other guys, and they are other guys because they're nowhere in the polls, battling each other. And the former president just sits this one out again.
Yes, and it'll be slightly smaller. So the first debate had 8 candidates. This one is going to have 6 candidates participating because Asa Hutchinson and Doug Burgum did not qualify for the second debate. So it's going to be Ron DeSantis, Vivek Ramaswamy, Nikki Haley, Mike Pence, Tim Scott, and Chris Christie. And you mentioned that abortion might be an issue. I think clearly in Iowa, the other candidates may see that abortion is an issue where they can make inroads on Donald Trump. But I think that's going to be very difficult. There are still a lot of Republicans who give Trump credit for appointing the Supreme Court justices who overturned Roe v. Wade. And has at his event in Maquoketa, 2 area legislators spoke, Luana Stoltenberg and Stephen Bradley. They're both members of the Iowa House. They're both very strongly anti-abortion, and they have endorsed Trump for president. So I think he's protecting that flank pretty well. In New Hampshire, oddly, I mean, it's not a very strongly anti-abortion state. So I don't think that stance, if it does help any of these candidates in Iowa, it might work against them in New Hampshire.
And while all this is going on, the House of Representatives will open its impeachment inquiry into President Biden on Thursday. And that promises to be, well, what do we want to say? What's the best word, the neutral word? That promises to be quite a circus.
Yes, I think so. I mean, I think that the Democrats who are on the committee are going to be loaded for bear and pointing out some of the inconsistencies in how this investigation is going on and some of the inconsistencies in the witness accounts. And we'll just see. I mean, I think that the danger in this impeachment inquiry is that the more they talk about Hunter Biden's business dealings and President Joe Biden allegedly benefiting from that, Donald Trump's children did a lot of business activity during the years he was president. And I expect that that's something the Democrats on the committee are going to try to highlight during their speaking time.
I've said this on this broadcast before, and we've talked about it briefly. I think that it is likely that every future president is going to be impeached. Tit-for-tat situation. This is clearly an effort to retaliate against Democrats for twice impeaching Trump. It looks as if our divisive politics are so hateful, this is the inevitable outcome.
Well, yes, if the House of Representatives is controlled by a different party from the president. But I don't think we'll see any presidents getting impeached if their party also controls the House. But I agree with you. This is definitely part of politics that's here to stay. It's not clear at all whether the House Republican caucus has the votes to actually vote through articles of impeachment against Joe Biden. That may be a difficult decision that the speaker has to make sometime in the winter or spring.
And of course, the Senate will never convict.
That's right. They would need a two-thirds vote. There's no way any Democrat would vote to remove Joe Biden from office. But also, I would think that if this goes up to the Senate for an impeachment trial, several Republicans probably also would vote against removing Joe Biden from office.
And one more quick note, the Libertarian Party of Iowa announced it's going to hold caucuses on January 15th in Iowa, the same night that the Democrats and Republicans are going to host their caucuses.
Yes, I wonder how many precincts caucuses will manage to have an organized libertarian presence. The Libertarian Party does qualify as a major party in Iowa now. That's because their candidate for governor received more than 2% of the vote in last year's gubernatorial election. And that means, among other things, that under state law, they can hold these caucuses. But it's a little bit difficult. I mean, I just don't know. Again, there are about 1,700 precincts across the state of Iowa. And if there are more than 100 of them where they can manage to get a Libertarian caucus group together, I'll be surprised.
And Laura, there are at least, as I read it, 8 candidates running to become the Libertarian presidential nominee in 2024. Who knew?
Yeah, there are a lot of declared candidates. I get press releases from some of them. I mean, I think there are still some questions about other bigger names who may get in the race. I don't think there's anybody who's a favorite or a front runner right now for the Libertarian nomination, but occasionally they have nominated, the party has nominated former Republicans. And there have been some rumors that somebody, for instance, Justin Amash, former member of the U.S. House, might be one of those candidates.
It is 11 minutes and 18 seconds after the hour, wherever you're listening. And this is KHOI's Capital Week with Laura Bellin and me, Dennis Hart, your one-stop source for everything political going on in Iowa. We are here every single week at this time to talk about what's been happening in and around the state capitol and what it all means. And Laura, while the Writers Guild apparently has settled its strikeout in Hollywood, doesn't matter to us because we employ no writers on this program. We do it all ourselves and with a great deal of efficiency, I might add, Laura.
Yes, thank you. You put together the run of show. So yeah, we don't have anyone who's a member of the Writers Guild doing that.
Not getting any union wages for this one, I'll tell you that. Okay, this is a big story that broke this afternoon. The Iowa Boards and Commissions Review Committee met on Monday morning and unanimously voted on its final recommendations. There are many of them, and we are going to go a little bit in depth and try to simplify what it means. It's complex, but we are going to simplify. To start it out, it recommends that 111 boards and commissions out of the current 256 be eliminated or consolidated with other boards and commissions. That's 43% a reduction.
It's a big reduction. This grew out of the state government reorganization that the governor proposed and the legislature passed and the governor signed into law in the spring. And it greatly reduced the number of state agencies. And one result of that was that the law said that there's going to be this temporary review committee. It's going to look over all the boards and commissions and decide how many of them are still useful and how many need to be consolidated. And because so many agencies were consolidated, it means that some of the larger state agencies, in particular, the Department of Health and Human Services and the new licensing agency, the Department of Inspections, Appeals, and Licensing. There are many, many, many state boards that would fall under those rubrics. And some of those boards, it said that the agency director has to be a member. And it would be almost impossible for the director of these large agencies to be that involved in every board. So that is one of the things animating this whole drive to consolidate so many boards and commissions. The final recommendations, I should say that I was not able to attend this meeting today because they scheduled it for the Jewish holiday of Yom Kippur. But I am grateful to the reporters who were there and did cover it. So I did read up on the recommendations, very similar to the draft recommendations that came out in late August. Just a few of the commissions that had been on the chopping block are restored in this. None of this is going to happen unless and until the legislature approves a bill on it in the coming session, because all of these boards and commissions were established under state law. So you can't change them without changing state law.
So we're going to mention a few of the commissions that have been saved from elimination. There are many, including the Iowa Commission on Volunteer Service, State Youth Advisory Council, State Board of Nursing Home Administrators, Board of Athletic Training, and the Deaf Services Commission. All of them have been saved or at least merged with other existing groups.
And I wanted to add that there was one public hearing about a little more than 2 hours long in early September. And many people who showed up at that public hearing were speaking, advocating for the Commission on Volunteer Service. That's the commission that administers the AmeriCorps funding in the state. Also, there were quite a few people there to argue against eliminating the Board of Athletic Training. There were people who said, if Iowa becomes a state that doesn't license athletic trainers, we're going to attract all kinds of people whose licenses were suspended or revoked in other states. and they're going to come here, and that's going to be bad. The State Board of Nursing Home Administrators, there were several speakers who said, this is a terrible thing to do when we are seeing a lot of abuses happening in nursing homes. You've seen some of the stories, particularly Clark Kaufman of Iowa Capital Dispatch has been on this beat for a long time about the problems in some of the nursing homes. And finally, the Deaf Services Commission, there were a couple of people who pleaded with the members of the review committee not to eliminate that Deaf Services Commission. Those were all successful. They are, at least at this stage, they are not recommended for elimination anymore.
So the commission's on the status of African Americans, Asian and Pacific Islander affairs, persons with disabilities, Latino affairs, Native American affairs, the status of women, all are going to be folded into one board, the Human Rights Board.
And that's because all of those boards and commissions were previously under the Department of Human Rights, which was a small agency that was merged. It was eliminated in the state government reorganization. So that all became part of the Department of Health and Human Services. Now, I have not been able to get an answer on how this new Human Rights Board is going to function. I assume that what there may be under statute, there may be, let's say, one African-American member, one Asian member, one Latino member, one Native American member, and so on. Of course, that's very different from having an entire board with 10 or 11 people representing different parts of the community. As you know, and many of our listeners know, I mean, Black Iowans are not a monolith. Asian and Pacific Islanders are not a monolith. So this is going to be very different. And there was a lot of criticism of this proposal, but the board and review committee did not change their recommendation on this one.
And you briefly mentioned the Commission for the Deaf. It's going to be merged with the state's Dual Party Relay Council, a group that oversees Iowa's Dual Party Relay Service. That's something that helps Iowans who are deaf or hard of hearing and who have speech disorders. There was a big outcry about the potential elimination of this.
Yes, and I think that part of the reason why this is going to be saved is that other, the one that it's going to be merged with does have a dedicated stream of funding already. And so you certainly couldn't argue that it was going to save the state money. But the Deaf Services Commission, there were a lot of people during the state government reorganization bill when that was being debated. A lot of people showed up at the Capitol because an initial draft of that would have allowed the governor to close down the school for the deaf in Council Bluffs. And there was a lot of pushback. They changed that one. The legislature, that was one of very few amendments the legislature made to that bill. And so I think that we are seeing that at least some members of the deaf community have been very effective advocates.
And the committee also had another recommendation. In addition to commissions, committees that could be folded in, they recommend repealing the state law that requires a balance of men and women on boards and commissions.
Iowa was the first state to adopt a gender balance law. It was adopted in 1986, went into effect in 1987. At that time, the legislature was Democratic controlled and Terry Branstad, a Republican, was governor. And it's been seen as very successful in getting Iowa's boards and commissions to be gender balanced. When the Democrats controlled state government in 2009, they added to the statute a requirement for local boards and commissions, most of them, to also be gender balanced. So I assume that would be repealed under this recommendation. The governor, to my knowledge, has not commented on this. I heard Craig Paulson in one of the other meetings of this review committee. He said, look, we don't need this anymore because the boards are basically, you know, they are gender balanced. Well, one of the reasons they are gender balanced is because that's required by law. And so I do expect the legislature probably to pass this, especially if the governor puts it in a bill that she recommends. But I haven't seen any sign. I mean, we'll just see. In most states, I remember reading research on this a few years ago. Most states that don't have a law like this on the books, their boards and commissions are predominantly staffed by men.
And just to clarify again, these are only recommendations. They're going to be submitted to Governor Reynolds by this coming Saturday. And then next year, the state legislature is going to have a chance to vote on this.
Yes, and we don't know yet for sure. The governor's office has not confirmed whether she is going to introduce a bill. I assume that she will introduce a bill recommending the reorganization and elimination of many of these boards, but I haven't seen any confirmation of that yet. But either way, none of this can happen unless the legislature passes a new law and Governor Reynolds signs it, because these boards and commissions were all created by statute.
All right, Governor Reynolds made some more news last week, news that she really enjoyed making. She announced that the state's top corporate tax rate is going to decrease from its current 8.4% to 7.1% in the tax year 2024. there was already a state law that had been passed that would gradually decrease the corporate tax rate to a flat 5.5%, but this decrease is coming sooner than anyone expected.
Yes, it's always hard to project revenues in advance. And so the way they wrote that part of the law with the corporate tax cuts, they said it will only go into effect if the revenues are above a certain amount. So we got above that certain amount. But I will say that once the decrease happens, as far as I understand from the law, if the corporate tax revenues fall below that threshold, it's not like they move the tax rate back up. I mean, the tax rate is going down and will continue to go down every year that the Iowa collects more than $700 million dollars in corporate taxes. And one of the reasons why revenues have remained fairly strong, and not just in Iowa, but across the country, is we still have a lot of federal funding more than usual flowing into the states due to the American Rescue Plan. And that's one of the big question marks is what's going to happen in Iowa when the personal income taxes, the flat tax, is fully phased in by about 2026, and these corporate tax cuts are probably going to continue to phase in over the next several years. What's going to happen then if revenues do fall more than expected? And again, it is very difficult. I know someone who used to be on Iowa's Revenue Estimating Council, and he said it's a really tough job. To try to predict what the economic conditions are going to be like and what the budget revenues are going to be like more than about 6 to 12 months out, very difficult.
And you'll find out what's going on right here on Capital Week. So just stay tuned over the next weeks, months, years, decades. All right, Children in Iowa, other states wrongly disenrolled from healthcare program. This broke last week. The Federal Health and Human Services Agency said states have been incorrectly calculating Medicaid eligibility.
Yes, and this is a problem across the country. Again, this is not specific to Iowa, but it is related to some of the changes, I think, after the pandemic state of emergency. During the pandemic state of emergency, many, many more people qualified for Medicaid. And then as they rolled back some of those provisions in the spring, a lot of people were kicked off the rolls. But the federal HHS department has been saying that too many people were kicked off Medicaid. So this is probably going to be a pretty long process of going through and reviewing things. I haven't seen a firm number of how many children are probably going to be re-enrolled in Iowa, but it's a big deal for families. We know from the research that when families have access to Medicaid, that they're more likely to take their children, for instance, to regular wellness exams, more likely to get the scheduled vaccinations and other issues.
Right. All right. Here's a surprise that came on Monday afternoon, at least to me. Planned Parenthood announced it's ending its book sale fundraiser in Des Moines. It's been going on, Laura, for more than 60 years.
Yes, this is a big event. Traditionally has taken place in recent years at the state fairgrounds. For most of its history, it was an annual event. Then at some point, Planned Parenthood made it with a spring and a fall book sale. It is a major fundraiser for the organization. And the money raised from the book sale has traditionally funded their education activities. It does not fund abortion services or contraception services. It's been very specific to fund those education activities. So Planned Parenthood North Central States, which is the affiliate that includes Iowa now, they're going to have to figure out some way to pull in that money without the book sale. The book sale revenues were hundreds of thousands of dollars a year.
$10 million over 60 years. Yes, indeed. All right, let's move down to the hearing on a proposal to block vexatious citizens from accessing public records. Laura, I have to ask this. I just hate to ask it. Are you a vexatious citizen?
I am not vexatious. Well, I went to this board. We talked about this last week. This had initially been a proposal floated to the Iowa Public Information Board's legislative committee, and they kicked it to the full board, which had a regularly scheduled meeting last Thursday that I attended. And so they had a public comment where several people spoke, some for, some against the idea, and then the board members aired their views. There were quite strong differences of opinion. One of the past president or past chair of the Public Information Board, Julie Potorf, said she expected that she would be vehemently opposed to this idea. She said that government bodies already have remedies. If somebody is pelting them with a lot of requests, they can charge a fee for compiling records for overly broad requests. And she said if they feel that they're being harassed, they can go to court and try to get a civil injunction for harassment. The other members of the board, some of them sounded more sympathetic to the government bodies who are dealing with people who are just extremely persistent in filing numerous records requests, sometimes with verbally abusive language, but they said they're nowhere near ready to recommend something. So they kicked it back to the legislative committee. It sounds to me like there's going to be some kind of a public input period, maybe a public hearing where they invite input. And it sounded to me like they're going to spend the better part of the next year gathering information. So they probably won't propose anything to the legislature in time for the 2024 legislative session. Of course, members of the media community, including myself and the Iowa Freedom of Information Council, are very concerned about putting something into the law that would say government bodies can ignore requests from certain people, because maybe it's aimed at just a few people who are causing problems. But once it's in statute, government bodies could go to this board and they could try to block a journalist they don't like or somebody else in their community who is trying to get information that the government doesn't want to release. So I expect continued pushback against this, and I don't expect to see anything happening in the legislature very soon.
I'm glad to know you're not vexatious. All right. 4 minutes left here.
I don't consider myself vexatious. I prefer persistent.
Yes, you are. All right. Very quickly, Des Moines Mayor Frank County announced last week he's not running for re-election. Longest serving mayor in the city's history, 5 terms. 5 candidates have now announced their intention to run for the seat.
Yes, and it is. It's going to be the two candidates who probably have the best chance to win the mayoral election are both currently on the city council. Connie Bozen and Josh Mandelbaum are both running. And then there are several other candidates. I mean, I think it tends to be competitive. Now, in the past, in some years, there has been a runoff election if no candidate got 50% in November, but the city of Des Moines changed their ordinance on that. So now whoever gets the plurality of the vote on November 7th is going to be the next mayor of Des Moines.
And we know that Indira Shoemaker resigned from the Des Moines City Council earlier this month. We talked about that. Now, 7 candidates announced they're going to run for her vacant Ward 1 seat in November.
Yes, it's a seat. This is roughly the northwest part of the city of Des Moines. It just giving you a rough idea. I would say that the two candidates who probably look like in this field they have the strongest chance are Chris Coleman. He was an at-large city council member for a number of years. He has a lot of support in the business community. He lives in the Beaverdale area. And also Rob Barron. He's a former Des Moines school board member and chair. He's a former staffer to Senator Tom Harkin. And if elected, he would be the first Latino city council member in the city of Des Moines. So both of those candidates, I think, have very strong connections in fundraising. But there also are several other candidates, as you mentioned, who are active in the community, who are going to be on the ballot in November.
And briefly, we need to acknowledge that a former Iowa U.S. senator has died. Dick Clark, Democrat. He passed away at his home in Washington, 95 years old. He was elected, Laura, at a time when politics in Iowa were a lot different.
Well, on Saturday, I happened to be talking with a group of people, and a couple of them formerly worked on Dick Clark's staff. They said he was a wonderful person to work for. Several of them had also worked or volunteered on his campaign in 1972. And they were telling me that when he defeated the incumbent Senator Jack Miller, that was probably the biggest political upset in Iowa history of our lifetimes. This was just, Jack Miller had been elected in 1966. He had won all 99 counties, and then he ended up losing in 1972. Dick Clark had a very creative campaign. He walked across the state. He did a lot of retail campaigning. And then there was a damaging scandal. There was kind of a tax-related scandal affecting the incumbent senator that broke a few weeks before the election. And Dick Clark, although he only served one term, he is still remembered for work that he did on the Foreign Affairs Committee. He was a strong supporter of human rights. He was an outspoken critic of apartheid in South Africa. And his legacy will be long remembered.
And 30 seconds, it is possible there's going to be a U.S. government shutdown at the end of the week. We don't know, but it could be a pretty bad shutdown.
I think so. I think that Iowa's 4 U.S. House members who are all Republicans, I think that they're going to be hoping that there isn't a shutdown. Among other things, that would affect agriculture subsidies, the functioning of the USDA. But I just don't know whether House Speaker Kevin McCarthy can pull together a majority vote for any continuing spending resolution. Traditionally, what they do is they just extend the current spending levels while they're trying to work out a broader budget agreement. Right now, though, Kevin McCarthy may not have the votes to do that.
Laura, so much to look forward to for next week's show, the possible government shutdown, President Biden's impeachment inquiry, and of course, the Republican debate. We're going to be busy.
Yes, absolutely. I'll look forward to it.
Well, all right. That sounds good. And that is it. Indeed so. We are finally out of time for this edition of Capital Week. It zooms by so quickly for us. We hope it does for you as well. A reminder that the views and opinions expressed here did not necessarily reflect the opinions of KHOI Radio or its staff. Laura and I will be back here in this same time slot next week. We will. And as usual, we're going to talk about everything interesting or important or even entertaining that takes place in Iowa politics. And as always, we hope you can join us. Thank you so much for the privilege of your time. We appreciate it and we truly value it. Between now and next time, whenever that is, we hope you have a safe, healthy, and very, very happy week.